Welcome to Severn Covenant Church. And before we get started today, I want to bring you up to speed. We are in week 6 of our series through the book of 1 Corinthians titled Undivided. And just have a simple question I want to ask you guys, because I know I feel like this service is doing work. It's sowing into people. It's changing people's minds. It's motivating people towards deeper levels of commitment as followers of Jesus. But how do you guys feel about it? Going well? Can I get like a yes and amen? Like a yes, God is moving in my life through this series. So God is moving in people's lives through this series. And what we're seeing is we're seeing people get out of the bleachers and get onto the field. And they're serving alongside us now. We've seen people join our serve teams. We've seen people pony up and join our small groups where they're growing in relationships with other believers. And I believe that that's a direct result of what God has chosen to do through our series titled Undivided. And we're going to continue today. I'll be starting us off in chapter 3, verse 21, and we will work our way all the way to chapter 4, verse 7. I'll go ahead and read the text, and then we'll get started. And there we read, "So no one should boast in human leaders, for everything is yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the word or the world or life or death or things present or things to come. Everything is yours, and you belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to God. A person should consider us in this way, as servants of Christ and managers of God's mysteries. In this regard, it is expected of managers that each one of them be found faithful. It is of little importance to me that I should be evaluated by you or by any human court. In fact, I don't even evaluate myself, for I am not conscious of anything against myself, but I am not justified by this. The one who evaluates me is the Lord. Therefore, don't judge anything prematurely before the Lord comes, who will both bring to light what is hidden in darkness and reveal the intentions of the heart. And then praise will come to each one from God. Now, brothers, I have applied these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, so that you may learn from us the saying, nothing beyond what is written. The purpose is that none of you will be inflated with pride in favor of one person over another, for who makes you superior? What do you have that you didn't receive? If in fact you did receive it, why do you boast as if you hadn't received it?" So throughout this series, Paul's been reminding us that the church at Corinth is a divided church. And you have to keep in mind that Paul planted this church some 5 years prior to writing this letter. And during that time, because of the location of the city of Corinth, the church at Corinth had come under the influence of other pastors, other leaders, other motivational speakers, other philosophers that simply made their way to Corinth because Corinth was much like an urban cultural center, very similar to a New York City or a Los Angeles in our day and age. And so the mindset at Corinth, what it ended up causing people to do is to affiliate with particular groups or particular leaders or particular philosophies as they pertain to how people would live. And Paul highlights some of these affiliations in this letter. And he even says that some people are claiming affiliation with him. He also says that some folks at Corinth are claiming affiliation with Apollos. Others are affiliating themselves with Cephas. And as a result of these affiliations, some cliques have risen up in Corinth, and it's caused the church to stop growing. It's caused the church to become what was previously an undivided church has now become a divided church as a result of some of these affiliations. And at the heart of this, what we're seeing is that the people at Corinth have become more interested in their own personal preferences and their own passions than they are in God's purpose in God's mission. And that's what Paul's addressing. And so in today's text, what we're going to see is that these divisions they're merely symptoms of a bigger root cause that Paul is going to highlight. And so this morning I aim to draw two things from our text. The first is this, that pride paralyzes us. It paralyzes us from living the lives that God's called us to live. And then secondly, the gospel or Jesus propels us to engage in living the lives that we're called to live. Now, before I say anything about what I believe the root cause is at Corinth, I'll say this, that God, when he designed us, when he designed you and I, he hardwired us for significance, for deep significance, deep meaning, and deep purpose. And the reality is, that's our hardwiring, but the challenge is this, we don't start off with a deep sense of significance and a deep sense of purpose. And so what ends up happening is we're operating from a sense of emptiness. And so that sense of emptiness drives us towards certain behavior. And the behavior that Paul is gonna draw out, he's gonna highlight for us, the root cause of the division at the church at Corinth that Paul is going to show us is nothing other than pride. Pride is the reason for the rivalry and the envy and the strife that Paul has already mentioned in this letter. And it's the reason why Paul is writing this particular passage. And we see this if we look at verse 6 in chapter 4, where Paul says, "The purpose is that none of you will be inflated with pride." And he goes on to say, in favor of one person over another. And so it's real important that we understand the word that Paul uses when he says pride, because it's a word that's very unique to his writing. He uses this word for pride 5 times in this letter and 1 time in his letter to the Colossians. But you're not going to find this anywhere else in the Bible. And I believe that he uses this word on purpose. God inspires him to use this word because he wants to show us what pride does to our identity. He wants to show us how detrimental pride can be to our development as followers of Jesus and how destroying it can be to our identity. And the word that Paul selects, here's what it's very similar to. It's similar to an overinflated, bloated body part or organ. It's become so inflated with air that it's distended, it's painful, it's uncomfortable. It causes serious discomfort, and it actually, to an extent, it stops us in our tracks. And so the first idea that I want to draw out of the text today is that pride, every time, pride will paralyze us. And pride paralyzes us because it does 3 things to our identity. And I'm going to work through each of these 3 things this morning. The first thing that it does to our identity is it inflates it. It leaves it empty at the core, but it inflates it. The second thing that it does to our identity is it causes our identity to become deeply insecure because we're empty at the core. We're inflated and empty, which leads to insecurity. But then thirdly, because we're empty, because we're insecure, we find ourselves entrapped, trying to build an identity for ourselves. So Paul makes it very clear that pride can inflate us in verse 6 when he says, "The purpose is that none of you will be inflated with pride." And so when our identity becomes inflated with pride, we run the risk of becoming egocentric and self-centered. I want to pause and just talk about egocentricism for just like a second. What comes to mind? Imagine the most egocentric person you've ever imagined. Just think about it for a second. And I don't know about you, but I'm thinking of somebody who's overly confident. They're cocky. They're into themselves. They're all about them. Every time you say something, they just one-up you. I want to challenge that. That's not the only type of egocentricism that operates in the human heart. I believe that some of us would never call ourselves egocentric, but we are as egocentric as the puffed up, cocky, outward, you know, the outward facing egocentric. And where it happens for us is up here. We might not be willing to say it out loud, but it's happening up here. Our egocentricism is much more passive and it's much more quiet, but it doesn't mean that it's not there. So Paul tells us that when we get puffed up, we get egocentric, we get self-centered, and basically we convince ourselves that we have the competence to run our own lives, to make decisions that are going to move us forward, to make decisions that are going to create a deep sense of security and a deep sense of self-worth. And what we end up doing is we end up elevating our perspective, our passions, and our preferences over God's purpose. We elevate what we think is important, and we make that the main thing in lieu of making God's purpose, God's mission, the main thing. And we do this by gravitating towards people and things that kind of stroke our ego or make us feel important or make us feel significant. And when we're inflated with pride, the way that this works out is we never really have the opportunity to build relationships because we're so busy, we're so stuck on leveraging relationships to get ahead. We're stuck on networking people so that we can get that promotion or we can take that next step so we can be just a bit more successful. And instead of building relationships with people, what we do is we abuse people for self-gain. We use people as a stepping stone to get a step ahead. And see, the dilemma of being inflated with pride is that it absolutely will stunt our growth because we become so busy building a resume and networking people that we never actually develop healthy relationships. The relationships that God would use to call out our blind spots, to move us forward as followers of Jesus, to help us see things about ourselves that we just can't see. And this is exactly what's happening at Corinth. Because they're inflated with pride, they've become consumers. Meaning they're using Paul's name, they're using Apollos' name, they're using Cephas' name as a means of creating a more secure, a more positive outlook with regards to their own lives. They've become more concerned with their own wants and needs than they are the needs of the people that they're supposed to be growing together in faith with. And they've made their personal preferences the main thing in lieu of God's mission. And so pride inflates us. You can think of this as like a, you know, I have kids and sometimes we blow up balloons. And every time I blow up a balloon, I'm thinking we're just seconds away from chaos because the moment it pops, somebody's losing their mind. But you think of the balloon that you just blew it up too much and it flies out of their hand and it hits a blade of grass and it explodes and you're left with nothing. That's the type of inflation that Paul is talking about. But when you blow a balloon up too far, too much, you pipe it full of too much air, basically you're creating an insecure balloon, and that's what the next thing that pride will lead us to is deep insecurity. And here's how this plays out. Paul highlights it in verse 21 when he says, no one should boast. And then in verse 7 of chapter 4, he says, why do you boast? So another way that pride paralyzes us is it makes us insecure. But Paul is putting us on blast with regards to what we end up doing, the mechanisms we use to combat our insecurity. And those mechanisms are comparing and boasting. Pride will drive you to make comparisons between you and everybody else so that you feel better about the way that you're living, so that you feel superior and at the expense of making other people feel inferior. And boasting is just you trying to make people believe things about you that aren't even true. They don't even come close to being true. So comparing and boasting, when we get into it, it's driven by deep insecurity. If we were that secure, there'd be no reason to compare. There'd be no reason to boast. And what we're doing really is we're sidestepping our own problems. We're trying to cover up what we did last summer or what we did last night or what we did in the college dorm 15 years ago. We're sidestepping the honest reality about ourselves. Because at the end of the day, we don't want people to figure us out. We don't want people to know the whole truth because the whole truth about you and I, it's kind of terrifying. We don't want people to know that we can't shake an addiction or there's this thing that you're supposed to walk away from, but you haven't been able to walk away from it yet. And you're embarrassed to even say it out loud in public. And so in essence, what happens is our insecurity, it's going to isolate us. We're not going to get more secure in isolation. We're going to get more insecure. But here's how this works in other people's lives. Because maybe for you, it's not this. Maybe it's not that you're trying to cover something up. Maybe it's a little bit different. And so for some of us, pride that produces insecurity, what it really prevents us from ever actually doing is enjoying anything. You know, and you might think that people enjoy being wealthy. and having like loads of cash that they can roll around in like Scrooge McDuck. Or you might think that people enjoy the Beamer or the 10,000 square foot house. You might think that people find enjoyment in that. But the bigger question is, what happens when somebody shows up that's got more than you have, looks better than you look, and is doing things that you've never done, accomplishing things that you'll never accomplish? Because at that moment, insecurity kicks in. And everything that you thought you had becomes irrelevant and insignificant because you no longer measure up. Because the reality is we're driven to outdo the people sitting next to us. We're driven not just to have degrees and accolades, but to have more degrees and accolades than the other people in our lives. And so ultimately, we're just proud of being more wealthy than other people. We're proud of being better looking than other people, or more put together than other people, or more moral than other people, or more faithful than other people. We're proud that our kids are better than other people's kids. And here's the reality. Some people are wealthy and some people aren't. Some people are intelligent by way of our standards and some people aren't. Some people have dazzling good looks and some people need a makeover. And the only reason we make these comparisons is because there's a degree of insecurity in us. We call out someone else's weakness because it makes us feel strong. We call out someone else's fault because it makes us feel faultless. And so I'm just gonna take you down memory lane with me for a couple seconds, so track with me. I'm almost 20 years removed from high school, which is awkward for me to say. I don't like to think of myself as old or getting old, but I'm getting older, okay? Bear with me. Well, 20 years ago, I grew up with a little brother. He's 2.5 years younger than me. And this God put this person in our lives, and we didn't really think of it like that at that time. And so I had the privilege of driving this young man to high school every day, driving him home afterward. He was the right fielder on our baseball team, and I was the second baseman. And so our worlds collided around baseball. And as we got to know him, we realized that this guy was just different. He was deeply insecure, and so it didn't matter what we did over the weekend, he did something better. If we went to our grandmother's house over the weekend, he went to all of everyone's grandmother's house over the weekend. If we climbed a tree, he climbed 14 trees. If we cut down a tree, he cut down a forest. It did not matter what the line was. He always one-upped you. And at that time, Xbox was a thing, like the Xbox, the first one that ever came out. And there was this game called Halo. And my brother used to go to town playing Halo. This is kind of embarrassing for me to say out loud in public. But we did. And when we beat Halo, we got to the end. We were like, we beat Halo. And he was like, I beat Halo 2. Like Halo Part 2. And we were like, there's no such thing yet. And so what we eventually decided is, man, you are the Lion King. And so we dubbed him the Lion King. And every story he told wasn't told for the sake of accuracy or for the sake of helping move people forward. He was just trying to shield the reality about himself. I mean, we knew more about him than he realized. There was a reason why I was driving him to school. There was a reason why we spent so much time with him. And he wasn't proud of those reasons. And so he masked, he used all those stories as a veil to shield his insecurity. And so this is how we fight our insecurity. We put a veil over it by making people believe things about us that aren't true. And the reality is when people don't believe us, we just convince ourselves that they're true anyway. Because we want to be more intelligent. We want to be better looking. We want to be more financially stable. We want to be more successful. We want to be significant. And the reality is God has hardwired us to be that way. So it's not wrong to want to feel significant. What's wrong are the places that we turn to find a sense of significance. And so to an extent, we operate from a point of insecurity. The church at Corinth was operating from a point of insecurity. And all the people that were fighting over Paul and Apollos and Cephas and claiming affiliation with this leader and that leader, they were doing so because they had become deeply insecure. Their pride had driven them to become deeply insecure because they were looking beyond what they already had, beyond the complete work that they had in Jesus, and they were trying to complete the work themselves. But because of their insecurity, the church at Corinth, it stopped growing. They stopped growing individually. They stopped growing as a corporate church. They stopped growing to every degree you could imagine. Because pride, what it will do is it'll cause us to create a resume that shields the worst parts about us and highlights what we believe the people in our lives value, what society values, what our parents value, what our employer values. So we hide the worst parts of ourselves and we pretend when it comes to, we over-exaggerate the best parts of ourselves. And if that's how we're living, we're never gonna grow. And so pride, it will inflate us. It causes us to become inflated in essence, empty at the core. It causes us to be deeply insecure. But thirdly, it causes us to be entrapped. And the reason why we become entrapped when we go down the pathway of pride is because pride will never lead us to the thing that's going to ultimately give us that deep sense of security, the deep sense of significance, the deep sense of self-worth that each and every one of us craves. And so we get into perpetually abusing and using people and things, and we're on a never-ending race to find significance. And that's why we're entrapped, because the race never ends. And to highlight this, I'm going to use somebody that maybe you're familiar with, but this somebody, they did an interview with Vogue magazine a number of years ago, and they were talking about their career. And this individual goes by the name of Madonna. Don't judge me. It's not like I had Madonna on my playlist on the way in here. I'm just telling you how she feels about her career, about her life, and I think she might be onto something. And here's what she says. My drive in life comes from a fear of being mediocre. Tell me you haven't been there. That is always pushing me. I push past one spell of it and discover myself as a special human being. But then I feel I'm still mediocre and uninteresting unless I do something else. Tell me you haven't been there. Because even though I have become somebody, I still have to prove that I am somebody. My struggle has never ended, and I guess it never will. This is what happens when we become entrapped in pride. Every time we accomplish something, we feel like we're winning, and then tomorrow comes. And we have to accomplish something all over again in order to feel like we're winning again. And when we don't accomplish something, we get deflated. We feel insignificant. Insecurity comes back. Here's the reality about us. Because we're on this side, our ego is like a black hole. It's insatiable. And regardless of what we try to fill it with, it just stays empty. It's like a bottomless pit. And our need for significance, our need for self-worth, our need for love and acceptance is never fulfilled through our effort, through our success, through our relationships with some leader that we're only claiming affiliation with because of the way that they improve our public persona. The reality is today's success is oftentimes met with tomorrow's failure, and then what? Because our ego is a black hole, it doesn't matter what we try to put into it. Because just when we feel like we're somebody, we realize somebody reminds us. Something reminds us that we're nobody. And this is the normal state of our identity. This is what Paul is trying to help us understand when he uses the word pride. He's trying to help us understand that we crave significance. And it's okay to crave significance. It's okay to want to feel important. He's trying to help us understand that because we're hardwired to crave significance, we're hardwired to be significant, we're going to be entrapped in trying to find significance until we actually find it. Paul knows this, and he wants to show us the difference that the gospel can make in transforming our identity and filling our emptiness and transforming our insecurity into security. And taking us from a place of feeling entrapped to a place where we're propelled to live the lives that God has called us to live. So listen to what Paul says in chapter 4, verse 3. He says, "It is of little importance to me that I should be evaluated by you or any human court. In fact, I don't even evaluate myself. For I am not conscious of anything against myself, but I am not justified by this. The one who evaluates me is the Lord." On a surface level, this sounds pretty pretentious and prideful, does it not? Paul is saying, I don't really care what you think. And he takes it one step further and he says, I don't even care what any human court thinks about me as an individual. Now, the word evaluate that Paul uses here, that word has deep significance for us because it's not just a generic evaluation. It actually means final verdict. What Paul is saying is you don't have the objectivity, the wisdom, the knowledge base about me to render the final verdict about my life. And in fact, there's no human court that occupies that role for me. No human court has the authority to deliver the final verdict for my life. And what Jesus is what Paul is showing us is that final verdict that he's alluding to, that's exactly what we crave. That's the significance that we crave. That's the acceptance that we crave. That's the love that we crave. That is what Paul is showing us. And he's showing us that only Jesus can deliver that verdict. That Jesus, in Jesus, we reach the end of our search for significance. That only Jesus can propel us beyond our inflated ego, our deep insecurity, in the entrapped lives that we lead. And so the second idea that I want to draw out from our text is that Jesus propels us. And Paul is telling us that it doesn't really matter what people think of us. And this might even sound familiar. I would wager that some of us have used this line on our kids when they come home after a really bad day at school and they just had a bad day and people are telling them things that maybe some of them are true and maybe some of them aren't. But we don't even take it that far. We're just like, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter what other people think. You may even like coach yourself through the day to day thinking, you know what? It doesn't matter what people think. It doesn't really matter what people think. All that matters is what I think. I'm not here to live up to anyone else's expectations, or I'm not here to prioritize anyone else's priorities. None of that really matters because I'm not supposed to be living according to other people's expectations anyway, and that other people's standards, they really just don't count. Like, this is not something that's that unfamiliar to us, but Paul goes way beyond that. He doesn't stop there, because he goes one step further and he says, you know what? I don't really hold your opinion of me in high esteem, but don't be offended because frankly, I don't even hold my own opinion of me in high esteem. And he tells us in chapter 4, verse 4, that even if he did that, even if his conscience was clear, it doesn't make him justified. It doesn't justify the life that he's living. You see, Paul's identity, it's not connected to people's opinions about him, and it's not even connected to his own opinions about himself. So I'd like to ask us the question, What are our identities connected to? What's your identity? Or who is your identity connected to? Who do you look to for approval? Whose opinions drive how you feel about yourself? This could be anybody. This could be a spouse. This could be your children. This could be a family member. This could be a friend. This could be someone you look up to, a boss, a colleague, a coworker. This could be anybody. And when they're approving you, when your approval rating is high and they're talking about it, you feel like you're on cloud nine. But the moment that wellspring of approval dries up, you feel more insecure and insignificant than you've ever felt. You see, Paul was a man of incredible stature, and arguably, I believe that he's one of the top 10 most influential people that's ever, ever walked the earth. And he had a pedigree that he could have been extremely proud of. He had a background that he could have been extremely proud of. Yet we hear him when he writes a letter to one of his friends in ministry, a young man by the name of Timothy. He says this about himself. He says, "Jesus came into the world to save sinners, and I am the worst of them." He's not saying he's a sinner just like everybody else. He's saying, "I am the worst sinner." We have a man here of incredible influence, of incredible confidence. You might even think he's kind of egocentric. But he's being more transparent than you and I are used to. And I don't know about you, but when I think about my weakest moments, that's when I feel the most insecure. What Paul is saying is, when he thinks about his weakest moments, that's when he feels the most secure in Jesus' finished work. He feels the most secure ultimately in his own skin, in his own identity, despite his failures. Paul is fully aware of his deepest failures, yet he refuses to connect them to his identity. He refuses to summarize himself based on those failures. His failures and his identity are in no wise connected. He doesn't view failure as anything more than an incident that has taken place in his life. And the other thing is, he doesn't see accomplishment as anything other than what God has allowed in his life. He's not building an identity on his failure rate, and he's not building an identity on his success rate. He is building his identity on something else. He is showing us that through Jesus' accomplishments, that we can reach a place. Through what Jesus has done, we can reach a place to where our identity, it's filled, not empty. It's deeply secure, not deeply insecure. We can reach a place where we're not entrapped, but we're propelled. And the question is, how did Paul get there? How did he move beyond the paralysis that pride causes in our lives to be propelled to engage in the work that God had for him? And so he says, I'll just say it again. He said this. He said, "I do not care what you think." And then he says, "My conscience is clear, but it doesn't make me innocent." Paul is talking about the ultimate verdict that only Jesus can render. You're never going to hear the ultimate verdict from your spouse. You're never going to hear it from your family members. You're never going to hear it from church leadership the way that Jesus can render it. Only Jesus can render that verdict for your life. And this is exactly what we crave. Paul is saying that even though his conscience is clear, there's something bigger than his conscience at work. Something that can fulfill absolutely everything that you and I are looking for. And until we get there, here's what that means. Every single day we're going to look at it We're going to look forward in the relationships that we have with people, in the things that we do, in the efforts that we make. Every day we're going to drive ourselves back into that courtroom trying to hear that verdict. And if we don't drive ourselves there, someone else is going to take us there. Or we'll remember something that reminds us of how insignificant and unvaluable or unworthy we are. And because of this, some days we feel like we're winning, some days we feel like we're losing. But Paul is uncovering a secret for us. It's the secret that he discovered that delivered the verdict that his life craved, that my life craves, that your life craves. Only Jesus can take our inflated, empty, insecure, entrapped identities and propel us to live out God's purpose. And because Jesus can do this, when God sees us, here's what God says. He says, "This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." Because of Jesus, we are free from condemnation. Because of Jesus, we're free from the guilty verdict that you know you deserve, that I know I deserve, that we know we deserve. You see, in Christianity, what makes Christianity different than any other worldview is that in Christianity, the moment that you believe, God sees Jesus' perfect work as if it were your perfect work. God sees Jesus' perfect performance as if you performed perfectly, and he renders a verdict based on that. This is unlike anything that we know. You and I are used to getting the verdict after we've performed. Christianity delivers the verdict before we've ever performed. I'm used to grad school, meaning that I go to grad school and then I get a diploma when I'm done with graduate school. I'm not used to, you guys would laugh at me if I told you I went to grad school and they gave me the diploma first. That'd be silly. That'd be ridiculous. That's not how we operate. That's not how we naturally are driven. We feel like we have to earn the verdict. We're driven to earn the verdict, but what Paul is telling us is, put all that aside. You don't have to earn the verdict. The verdict has been earned for you. Through Jesus, the verdict is in, and it's not just delivered so that we can hear it. It's given so that we can operate out of it, so that we can be propelled out of the not guilty verdict, that we can be propelled forward from a place of deep security, from a place of deep significance, from a place of love and acceptance. We can be propelled forward and live the lives that we're called to live. Because of this, we don't have to do things that just build up our resume anymore. We don't have to do things just for the benefit of making ourselves look good. We don't have to hide anymore. Because in Jesus, we can come clean and stop building an identity for ourselves and operate out of the identity that Jesus is freely giving us. And maybe you've never really understood this difference between Christianity and other worldviews, but it's important that you hear this. The verdict is rendered before we ever perform anything. And it's not until the verdict is rendered that we're actually able to perform. Every other worldview is built differently. If you're a Buddhist, you're trying to earn your keep. If you're an atheist, you're trying to earn your keep. If you're Muslim, you're trying to earn your keep. But if you're a Christian, God earned your keep on your behalf through the perfect work of Jesus. That is what sets Christianity apart. And the way that he did that, is Jesus saw us. He saw us empty. He saw us inflated in our pride and our ego. He saw us deeply insecure. He saw the guilty verdict that you and I deserved. And he didn't come to deliver the guilty verdict, even though we deserved it. He didn't come to put us on trial. Jesus came to be put on trial so that we wouldn't have to be. He didn't come to declare us guilty. He came to be declared guilty so that we could be declared righteous. Jesus, the perfect, innocent Son of God, was put on trial in our place. And when he carried that 80-pound crossbar from the court to Golgotha, where he would be executed, on that crossbar, he he carried with him our pride, our shame, our guilt, our sin. He carried the pride that paralyzes us, that leaves us inflated and empty and insecure and entrapped, trying to build an identity for ourselves. And he didn't just carry it, he bore it so that we would no longer have to. Listen to what Paul says in chapter 4, verse 8. He says, "You are already full, you are already rich." So here's the thing, when you feel empty, when you feel insignificant, when you feel like you can't take the next step because you're still worried about the last 14 steps that you took and the way that they're setting you back, when you feel like you can't walk away from the life that you're living, when you feel like you can't put down the addiction that is driving you to think that you're crazy, when you can't get over the hump, when you can't do what you know you're supposed to do, when you can't live up to anyone else's expectations, let alone your own, when you feel like you can't make it, like you can't do it, when you feel empty and you feel insecure and you feel entrapped, know that you deserve a guilty verdict, but the verdict has been rendered and it is not guilty. Know that everything is yours in Christ Jesus, that in Jesus you have absolutely everything that you need because Jesus will strengthen you. Jesus has made you blameless. And the reason I am so confident about this is because our relationship with God is not based on our behavior. It's not based on our credentials. It's based on Jesus' shed blood that when it was poured out and it hit the ground, grace hit your life, forgiveness covered all of your sins. That God buried your pride. He took your deflated feeling, your deep insecurity, and he filled you and he made you secure. God gave you everything that you need to get beyond the paralysis of your pride so that you could be propelled to live the life that God has called you to live. Amen.